Welcome to the Fabric Podcast. In this episode, live from Minnehaha Falls, Heidi Esposito and Maya Dallagher share some of the wisdom they've gleaned from the youngest members of the Fabric community, and with a lot of laughs, help us see that in this game of life, play is no trivial pursuit.
Good morning, Fabric, and welcome. We're glad you're here. We're welcome to those of you that are streaming live on Facebook, and many of you might listen later because it is a pretty glorious day, right?
True.
It's just beautiful. I'm Heidi Esposito, and this is
Maya Dallagher.
And we are part of the Fabric staff that get to help kids and youth learn how to be human in ways that helps them to show up as their true whole selves and learn how to be in community and just discover more about that mystery of great love that is woven into our world. And I think we feel pretty lucky to get to grow alongside and know some pretty amazing young people. So during the month of August, we have been exploring with Fabric what it means to be in the game of life. And I feel like what I've taken in so far is how the game of life is lived out more fully and woven more deeply when I have the courage to look at it honestly and then respond in that same way. If you missed any of those weeks, they're all linked on our website so you can catch up that way, and there's some show notes there too. But today, we are dipping into part of this game of life that is near and dear to us, play. With the current news today, I think it begs to wonder if talking about play should really be taking a front seat. But I encourage you to stay with us, because I think we're going to get to a place where we can see how playing helps us to get to that true whole self that we want to be, and play can be a transformer in those hurting places in our world. If I was honest, I would say that my career path has really sort of woven and turned around my love of play. I mean, we get to go to work and get out the markers and the craft supplies. We get to play games with kids. We get to play out in nature. And there was even a time that I embraced Master of Fun as my job description. I love the quote by Robert Frost that says, "When work becomes play, and play becomes our work, your life unfolds." And unfolding to me feels peaceful and not forced and not rushed. Unfolding feels like it's in alignment with my true self and with others and with that mystery that's bigger than all of us named God. And doesn't that feel like something that you want more of, right? There's a ton of research as to why play is so important. And nearly every research scientist and educator from Einstein to Piaget to Marie Montessori all tout play as being such an important part of our growth and development. But honestly, for even me and Maya, getting to play every day or every week becomes really hard for us. I think we start to see play as something separate to the game of life. We think that we have to wait until we have time to do it, or all of our work is done, or maybe we have to wait until we feel like we're in the mood for it, right? So let's dig in to this idea of play, and maybe it can help us to become better players in this game of life. If you picked up a Sunday paper, you might have noticed it did look kind of fun. We thought if we're going to talk about play, we might as well be playful. So it's a game board. Let's go to the start, and let's talk about what play is. So Maya, what comes to mind? What words come to mind when you think of play?
Games, throwing things, wow. Jumping.
Okay.
Those are just
off the top of your head?
Off the cuff,
all right, yeah. Any other words from the audience that come to mind? Yeah.
Jumping around.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think of active, because I think you have to participate, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think of laughter and smiling. I also think of the word freedom, because for me, being free feels like an important part of the game of life, right? So I was listening to one of my favorite podcasts hosted by the author Glennon Doyle called We Can Do Hard Things. And she had a whole episode on fun and play. And I liked the definition that they landed on for play, as play is doing something that brings you joy and delight when you don't know what the outcome will be. And that's like your first game space there. You can fill that in. Play is doing something that brings you joy and delight when you don't know what the outcome will be. Play is purposeless. It allows us to become totally immersed. It allows us to lose our self-consciousness. So Maya, thinking of this past week, I want you to give yourself a play score, fist to five. Fist being zero or none, and five maybe being like every day. Like, how often has play been part of your week? Two.
I think it was kind of sad. Yeah. I think I could do better.
And you guys can maybe give yourself a play score, too. There's a spot to write that down. I feel like when we started to dig into this message, I was like, five all the way. I'm going to paddleboard every day. I'm going on a bike ride. We're going to have backyard games. And then life just gets busy, right? And mm-hmm. I would maybe give myself a two as well. I think, like many of us, I confuse things like self-care and rest as things that I do for fun. Or anything I'm doing that's not work, or probably, if I'm honest, it would be having a to-do list and getting to cross some things off. But here's the shocker. The opposite of work is not play. The opposite of play is actually melancholy. And that is your next square on our game board. It always has been somewhat surprising to me that when I'm feeling kind of down or low, my instinct is to be quiet and to rest and maybe to isolate, and that actually doesn't make me feel any better. I also might create that to-do list because I like to cross things off, but that only makes me feel better for a hot second. If I was honest about when I have that mood booster that I'm really looking for, it's when I've been playful. I was thinking, Maya, about the time that you and I went to Anna's cabaret performance, and we got to dress up, and then we just danced our butts off.
Yeah.
That was such a mood booster for me. And you might have been at the Falls earlier this summer when Melissa pulled Katie up to the front to demonstrate the jumping circle. I know if you remember that. But it isn't unusual for Katie Kennedy to notice kind of a stressful mood, a brew in the office. And she'll suggest a jumping party. And we all get up and hold hands and jump in a circle. And we're laughing and we're smiling and it feels very freeing. And the results are sort of astonishing. This past year especially, people have really sought out help for those feelings of depression. I mean, the pandemic and the quarantining and the fear around the virus. The use of antidepressants has risen about 35%. Now, I'm not here to say that people shouldn't take antidepressants or seek help with therapy for depression. And there's definitely a difference between having a depressed mood and a diagnosis of clinical depression. And in our house, we are big fans of having medication and therapy in our toolbox for help with mental health. But what if we're missing a tool that is as fun and accessible to us as play? So Maya, I'm in. I think I kind of have my hands around this play thing, and I want more of it. So like, is there a class?
Yeah, I've got a crash course for us, right. And it actually starts in the Boundary Waters.
Ooh.
So moment for the Boundary Waters. It is on fire right now in some places, and there are people up there, and that is kind of scary, so I hope everybody is getting out safely there. Mm-hmm. Just a moment for that. Last year, I was in the Boundary Waters, and we stayed at this beautiful site, kind of a little peninsula, and right next to us, there was a small bay, and as we're getting set up, we noticed something across the bay, and then there's another thing, and another thing, and it turned out to be a romp of otters. It was like a whole gang, and they were literally like sliding into the banks. They were doing somersaults. They were chasing each other, and I was completely captivated. It was such a gift to witness that play and to have it awaken this play in me. And I'm going to call play today an evolutionary gift, because play is something that is naturally inside all of us. So on your game board in the next spot, you can put play is in us. It's something that we get to do and just have. So we can see that play is in us by looking at our animal friends, like otters and dolphins and orcas and our pets, but also in animals that you wouldn't expect to be playful. For instance, there was this polar bear, and I don't know if you know this, but it's hard life to be a polar bear these days. Like, I'm guessing harder than ever to survive, probably constantly hungry, all those things. So this polar bear is walking along, heading towards a camp, and there are two huskies chained up, ready to be lunch for this starving polar bear. So it's coming along, it has a predatory gaze, okay? It's gonna eat. But one of the huskies has a posture of play. So its front paws are down, its tail is wagging, and something happens to this bear, and the moments after this were described as a play ballet. This bear, who is starving, is playing with the husky. And this story does not even end with the polar bear eating the husky anyway. Which shows us how powerful play can be. It overrode this bear's instinct to eat in order to play, which is pretty astounding. Our ancestors can also teach us about play and how it is inside of us. If you're at a museum, you might see a bunch of like artifacts made out of like rocks and bones, and often there are tools, but then there are also flutes. Like, across the world, the first people made flutes, which makes me think, were flutes a survival tool? Is play a survival tool? I think that it is. And the Bible also talks about play and how it's in us. In Ecclesiastes, which is a wisdom book, in chapter 5, I think this is kind of what the author is trying to tell us. Take care of yourself. Have a good time, and that's about it. There are so many playful moments at our fingertips, and God wants us to enjoy them. It's God's gift. Once again, that word, gift. Now, when I first read that, I was pretty hesitant. I questioned it a lot. There are so many hard things happening in the world, and we're supposed to just, like, take what comes our way and live it up. It felt, like, selfish and frivolous and arrogant and all those things. But then I was thinking about the polar bears and our ancestors and how they played anyway. They were barely surviving and they played anyway. So I came away thinking, we can't like always be playing, but I think that there is a lot of play in us that we push away very often, and we really should be practicing that play and helping. I think that play is what's gonna help us show up to this world that seems to need our help a lot these days. So in the next box, why don't you write, play happens in the hard places too, because it does, and it's needed, it's natural. It's not selfish or foolish, it's an evolutionary gift, and we'd be a fool not to take it. So we're gonna do a little hands-on research about the play that is inside of us, okay? This is from the experts at Playmeo. They really know what they're talking about, and there are kind of four steps to the evolution of play. It starts out as an egg, all right? And then the next step naturally is the chicken, right, of course. The next step in the evolution is a dinosaur. You got the claws, yeah, chicken, dinosaur. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the final level is the supreme being. Now you may be asking, how do I get from an egg to a supreme being? And the answer is, rock, paper, scissors, shoot, okay? Everybody's gonna start out as an egg. You'll find another egg and play rock, paper, scissors, shoot. Whoever wins gets to be a chicken, and they'll find another chicken and play rock, paper, scissors, shoot. And whoever wins gets to be a dinosaur. They'll find their dinosaur friends and play rock, paper, scissors, shoot. And then they will play another dinosaur, and whoever wins that rock, paper, scissors, shoot gets to be a supreme being.
Yep.
Yep.
All right.
Three, two,
one. Around. Yep.
Go.
There you
start
go.
As an egg.
All right.
All right, let's see our supreme beings and give a round of applause. Woo! For evolving. Good job. And I honestly think that maybe we're all just a little closer to enlightenment after playing. So, if it's in our DNA to be playful, why are we so bad at it, right? So we're gonna talk for a minute about the enemies of play. And on the next three squares on your game board, I want you to write some things that fit our definition of play. Things that bring you joy and delight, things that don't really have an intended outcome, maybe things that you could do for an endless amount of time. All right, so write those, and we're gonna call those our playlist. You may not put to-do lists on there, okay? One's on the Enneagram. No, don't put any to-do lists on there. All right, Maya?
I've got swimming.
Uh-huh.
And dancing.
Ooh, yep.
And dyeing my hair pink.
Nice, mm-hmm. I love it. Yeah, that's playful, excellent. I feel like for me, like the first two or three were pretty easy, and then I had to go, wait, what else do I like to do? But I came up with hiking, because being in the forest really just, I feel very immersed when I'm in the forest. And I like to do art. I love to play with my dog, Juniper. Our family really loves board games, and it provides excellent opportunity for a ton of laughter. So that's on my list too. And then I was thinking about my youngest daughter, Lizzie, and I took a trip to Phoenix, Arizona, and on a whim, we decided to take an improv class. And if you haven't taken an improv class, I highly recommend it. It is an excellent opportunity to be playful. There's no intended outcomes. It's very purposeless sometimes, and it does have a ton of laughter. All right, kids, I have a question for just you. All right, I want you to raise your hand if you think it's easy peasy to come up with a list of things that you like to play. All right, do you think it's easy to do? Yeah. I'm seeing a lot of hands go up, right? I think if I was gonna quiz the adults, I might get some half-hearted hands in the air. Why is that? We start out being playful and that it's easy and natural for us to do, but what happens to us? What shifts us out of that state of being playful? So we're gonna talk about the enemies of play. And Brené Brown, in her book, The Gifts of Imperfection, hit it right on the head for me. She talks about how we as a culture have put so much value on productivity and efficiency and busyness that doing anything that isn't those things just feels kind of wrong in our bodies. So let's write productivity as our first enemy of play. For me, this is the wiring inside me that works the hardest against my love of play. My Myers-Briggs personality letters, my StrengthFinder words, my Enneagram number, my parents' really strong value of hard work have all put me in the mindset of work first, get it all done, and then maybe you can play. Well, that almost just never happens. There's always more work to do, especially if we're looking for it. It's like I'm swapping out play for accomplishment. And maybe that's why I chose a career that allows me to play within my definition of productivity, because I can just like bypass that guilty part of it. And I think at home too, I get into this pattern of scarcity thinking around time. I feel like I just need to put my head down and plow through my to-do list, because what if something comes up and I'm not able to complete the work? And I almost never feel that way about play. And how many of us kind of wear that busyness as like a badge of honor? We appear to a gathering with people, and someone comes up and says, oh, how you been? What you been up to? And we answer, what? I've been so
busy.
Right. And I feel like we would never say, well, I've been really playful. I mean, number one, it's probably not true. And number two, we might feel sort of embarrassed to say that. And that is our second enemy of play. You can write that down, shame. I think digging into this topic of play, I came across a number of writers and speakers that all talked about how in American culture, we assign a lot of shame around what we perceive as laziness. Somehow we refuse to see the things that our bodies actually need, like rest and play, as laziness. We somehow refuse that, and we just kind of stick with feeling that shame around that. I can remember times when the kids were little, and I had definitely spent the whole day caring for my kids and the whole day caring for my home and lots of parts of the day doing my work that was outside of the home, and at the end of the day, sitting down on the couch, getting ready to watch a show. And then when I would hear my husband at the time, he would drive and pull in the driveway, and I would pop off the couch because I did not want to appear that I was being lazy or unproductive. And that leads me to our third enemy of play that I want to talk about, and that is the fear of vulnerability. And you can write that in one of the game squares as well. It's just hard for us to look silly or childish or foolish. All right, I want to do an experiment with you. In your Sunday papers, you should have gotten a little square paper that looks like this. Get that out. And kids, I think there was one in the kids' bags as well. You can do this too. All right. I want you to take your pen and the paper, and I'm going to put 30 seconds on the clock, or Maya's actually. And I want you to draw or sketch the person sitting next to you. Okay? Paper, pen, go. Oh, there it goes. Okay, pencils down. All right, I want you to go ahead and show your work to the person sitting next to you. Oh, nice job. I'm hearing a lot of nervous laughter and some murmurs. This experiment has been done in numerous college classrooms with adults, and every time, 100% of the time, adults report feeling embarrassed or self-conscious when they do this exercise. But kids, with them, it's a totally different story. Kids feel proud to show their work. They aren't embarrassed or they don't feel foolish, and they will talk about it with whomever will listen. In this same TED Talk, they showed an issue of a New York Times magazine talking about the seriousness of play. And on the cover was pictured people doing all different sorts of play all over the cover. Well, the funny thing was, every person that was on the cover was a child. We can wrap our heads around the idea of play being important for kids, but it feels silly or foolish to think of adults needing or wanting play. Dr. Stuart Brown, probably my hero. He's the founder of the National Institute of Play. He has studied rats that have been deprived of their natural instinct to play. And the result for them is death. And he's also done a lot of research on children that have been significantly deprived of play during their childhood. And there's a strong link between that and adults that grow up to commit murder and violent acts of crime. I mean, yikes, right? Figuring out how to get beyond this need for productivity and the shame around appearing lazy and our fear of vulnerability about looking foolish or childish, we need to get beyond that. I feel like to my health as an individual and to our health as a society of whole, we need to figure this out. So now that I dropped that.
Now I'm terrified and we need to play now.
I bet there's some ways that we can maybe become more playful, right?
Yeah, I have a few tools for us. Okay. So the first tool that you can write in the next little box is to believe. Mm-hmm. We have to believe that we can play and believe that it's important and it works. That's a huge hurdle. So say to yourself a few times with me here, I can play.
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 Yeah, okay. So that was just like trying it on a little bit. Maybe if you say that like 100 times a day, you'll start believing it. So let's get practicing that one. The second tool is to rediscover, or maybe uncover, or maybe rejoice. I really like rejoice because I think play is, it doesn't need to be something new. It can be something that you find joy in over and over again. Refinding that, rejoying. So I think of that playfulness growing up in my kitchen. We always ended up in the kitchen together. Often, like, the little tea towel whip would come out, you know, that was always playful, or the impromptu sing-alongs, or even low-rise jeans were popular back then, and if your butt crack was ever showing, my mom would come by with a pencil and put it in the holder, you know, if you will. So that was always, those are super playful moments that were just, like, uncovered. Remember, play is this evolutionary gift that's in us, and it was just, like, finding those moments again. So the third tool is to embrace the messy. Danny back there was just in the Boundary Waters with me last weekend, and we got pretty messy. There was one portage that it was kind of mucky, but Andrew and I were like, we're going to just put the canoe in, and we'll wade it through the muck, and this is going to work. This is the best path forward. Well, we get in there, and I have mud up to my waist, and, like, you can't move. And suddenly, I'm more concerned about saving my shoes, and, like, so I have to dig down and get my shoes. So I am completely covered in mud, up to my armpits, for sure. And I could have been super mad and frustrated and annoyed and, you know, all those things, but I was laughing instead. It was so funny. And looking back on the trip, I named that as one of my favorite parts of the trip. So that's very concretely embracing the messy. We don't all get covered in mud all that often. But I think even trying to find ways to turn towards play in those messy moments, like maybe you're super late driving somewhere, and instead of like telling yourself horrible things about yourself, you could like turn up the radio and like enjoy the ride anyway. So moments like that. Now the fourth tool is a complete game changer, really important. And it's actually sitting in a paper bag at the end of your bench that says do not open. So now is the time. Time to open your bags and find, are some of you finding it? Your very own chicken flinger. All right? Oh, yeah. If you don't have one, find one. If you have a bunch, give them to some other people.
Pass them out. And if you're on the east side, you're going to fling towards the west. If you're on the west side, you're going to fling towards the east. And we're going to have a minute or so of a chicken flinger battle. Free-for-all! Ah! All right. Chicken flingers. Down. I'm going to encourage you later to find one because it's part of your homework. So. But go ahead and have a seat. That was super fun. And for me, that felt a lot like lifting the restrictions that I have in my head, that all the shoulds, right? And it felt like letting go, which is kind of hard for me to do in a number of circumstances. So that's your fourth practice that you can write down, either letting go of restrictions or just letting go, right?
Or just chicken flinger. Or let's be honest.
Yeah, you
here.
Could just
chicken
write,
flinger.
Just shortcut right to chicken flingers. I feel like I need those practices a part of my day and reminders of them, and also reminders about why play is so important. I think we know in our gut that play is important, but we don't always stop to think about the whys, right? There's quite a list of byproducts that we get from play that are really important. And I say byproducts because we can't really create goals around play, right? That's counterintuitive. But the benefits are things that just naturally happen when we're engaged in play. And when I look at that list, I pause and I wonder, what if? Like, what would happen if more people played more often? Play, this is on your game board too. Play establishes a sense of safety and belonging. It builds trust. It creates empathy. It increases our flexibility and problem-solving skills. I mean, Do we need that today, right? It regulates our emotions. It boosts creativity. It improves brain growth and health at any age, right? It helps us to be more open to new ideas. And as I mentioned at the beginning of this message, it's an important tool for combating our stressed out and depressed moods. So I'm going to take a moment and look at those byproducts, and I want you to circle a few that really resonate with you. What if you would wonder what would help you to become more whole? Or what would help you to create healthier relationships? Or open up perspectives? When I read this list, it really makes me stop and wonder, like, why aren't we playing more? Why aren't we more playful? The list of good things that come out of play feels almost revolutionary. And in this world where we struggle to move past our history with racism, we feel stuck in the decisions around climate and the problems our planet faces. We feel really stuck in ways to find homes for everyone to live in and food for everyone to eat. Just driving to the falls this morning and listening to the news about Afghanistan and Haiti and the wildfires up north, it feels heavy and complicated and hopeless. The problems in my own life and the world around me seems to beg for new pathways and solutions that accessing and practicing that biological need to play just might be what we're missing. So I have three pieces of homework for you. I want you to write these down. Number one, I want you to work on your playlist. Keep adding things that bring you joy and delight. And then share that with your family and your friends. Where do you have connections? You can have like play buddies or play dates that for adults as well as kids. And number two, I want you to find ways to remember to pause throughout your day and to become more playful. We can turn on the music and just have a dance party while you're doing the dishes or cooking or get out the tea towels and have a little war going on with that too. I think that finding those moments, they're gonna look different for all of us, but finding those moments and figuring that out is really important. And number three, I hope you accept this challenge. I want you to find a chicken flinger to take home with you and commit to playing with it this week. Maybe having a battle in your home or a surprise attack for your coworkers, or maybe you create a game around your chicken flinger. Or, just use your imagination. And then I wonder at the end of the week if we look back and wonder and be grateful for all the ways that play opened up for good things to emerge for us. What were they? And can we be thankful for them?
The other day I was thinking, I want to be around a master of fun. I think that's the best way for me to like learn how to play. And there are actually a ton of masters all around us. If you're a kid and you can hear me, I want you to stand up on the bench. Stand up, wave your arms around, let us know you're here. Oh yeah, look at all those, look at all those shining faces. These are the masters, people. Somebody once said, these children are at the very center of life. And though that person was Jesus, and it was when the disciples were pushing a bunch of kids away. But let's look at these people and know that they are the center of life, that I want to be more like them, all right? So let's take three breaths to close out our time here. One breath simply for being in awe of these teachers around us. So one breath in. The next breath is for the inner child in ourselves, that play that's in us. And our last breath is to play more this week. Woo-hoo! All right, until next week, see you then.
Thanks for listening. We hope this conversation continues in your life. You can find other Fabric folks through our social media accounts @FabricMPLS or find resources for discussions with smaller groups, family, and friends on our website. We also have live gatherings in the Twin Cities we'd love for you to be part of. Learn more at fabricmpls.com.